Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Welcome to the show. This one is brought to you with West Yorkshire Electrical. You know that?
I know it, yeah.
What's your favourite colour wire? Is it the stripy one, the blue one, the brown one? What?
Oh, I think the stripy one's the safest one.
Yeah.
That's the earth one, isn't it? And then there's the live and in neutral.
I think it's wind and fire, isn't it, the other two?
Yes, and I just Google which one of those it is.
I do every time as well.
I wouldn't take this as fact, people. Yeah, do some research first. Yeah.
I do. I'm fairly sure I do the same. Like, I'm just going to double check, because it always says in the instructions, if you're going to wire something in, live to this one, what is it, neutral?
In a week dominated by Matt Letizia, I would say do your own research or speak to someone.
Employ a professional.
Who is a professional.
Which is exactly what I was leading to. And who could that be, Michael?
I would say West Yorkshire Electrical would be where I would go for that.
Is that because they're fully accredited?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And they love working with wires in, stuff with wires in. Yeah.
And renewable energy stuff.
Yeah. Specialists in renewables will wang some panels on your roof, solar panels if you like.
They won't, they'll put them on there nicely and carefully.
Yeah, that as well. And they will sort your roof out in the process. And they do independent roof work as well. Dedicated team of roofers within the business. wyelectrical.co.uk for details. And find them on socials as well. They're good peeps. Have a look. We are here to talk about Phil's new interests, which is probably, I'm going to look at today's new newsletter. Let me have a look. Is it about Real Madrid, probably? Let me have a look.
Sure is. Yeah. Good guess.
Not bothered about Leeds anymore, are you, Phil?
How are the boys at Sky Sports? Still there. Great set of lads.
We've got our people talking to their people. We'll see if that materialises. So Real Madrid and a pivotal penalty moment. So that's what you do now, isn't it? He's moved on from us, hasn't he?
Partially. Speaking of...
no denial.
Speaking of West Yorkshire Electrical, do they do PR management for new Twitter sensations?
Is that what you are?
I think the people should be told.
Are you on about Normanton?
Yeah. I do have a question about this, actually, because there was obviously no way I was going to waste time watching the video. So, Princess Diana and her reincarnation, I totally get that people believe in people coming back from the dead and life after death and all that. But why was Johan Cruyff supposedly in witness protection? What had he done and who was he being protected
from? I've got the clip here if you want it.
Has the Cruyff turn been declared woke?
It was not entirely clear. I think Johan Cruyff was just mentioned, and then he jumps on it, and it was like, "Yeah, I don't think he's dead." By the way,
we could play it. I mean, this show is known for highbrow intelligence stuff. Shall I play the clip? Do you want to hear the clip?
Yeah.
Basically, Johan Cruyff plus April 26th in numbers comes to 365. 365 comes to the Witness Protection Program. You heard it here first. I have a feeling that Johan is not gone. That might upset people. It might give people a lot of hope. I think he's not gone. I think he'll be one that comes and shares truth later down the line. I think there's a whole bunch of them coming back. That's my feeling. It's my intuition. People like Diana, JFK Jr., maybe even JFK. Well, I say JFK, yeah. That sounds a weird one, I know. But we've talked about a lot of weird stuff. But I believe Johan Cruyff, plus, because that's what they do. So bad ones use numbers. But in my experience also that I've learned over the last 4 years, good ones use numbers. How about this one? November 5th, return of Princess Diana, 88 miles per hour. Return of Princess Diana, 282. 282 is 88 miles per hour, and that's all to do with November 5th of this. Anyway, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But that's my feelings, and I put that out as a little whatever, you know.
You heard it here first.
You heard it here first.
If it doesn't happen,
you can come after me.
So there you go. I hope that clears it up for you, Phil. You were asking, so that's the answer.
No, thank you. I would like to check his workings, but that sounds plausible.
I like hearing it. We'll see what happens. Is it the sort of way you'd finish about, you know, well, do you think Dan James will come back in? Yeah, I think there's a chance he will because of, you know, Middlesbrough have obviously got issues at left back or whatever and they can exploit it there, but we'll see what happens. But he said, Princess Diana, I think she's coming back.
But he seemed to be saying, and if she doesn't, come and, you know, burn my house down, really, seemed to be what he was saying there.
Stick that in your daft newsletter, Phil.
Yeah, we'll do, yeah. Sign up and get it tomorrow.
In the mainstream media, you're not going to get that in there. The Athletic wouldn't dare to print that.
What they're scared of.
Exactly.
Anyway, shall we?
That's been a nice distraction from Leeds, hasn't it?
Yes.
Shall we just repeat what we've been saying recently and just win, you dickheads?
Yeah, I you know, that banner you were talking about hanging in the south stand, just get it done, dickheads.
Yeah.
It's pretty much it, really, isn't it? Is that us done?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was you actually who advocated for the banner. I just sort of came up with a slogan. So, you know, we could maybe collaborate.
We can sort of share the royalties,
glory on that. But yeah. I'd quite like us to win. Other things we need to factor in here, Saturday, the 20th of April, which when you do the numbers on that, what does that mean?
I can't.
Leicester against West Brom and Southampton at Cardiff.
Puskás to come back.
Right.
On the 4th of July next year.
Right.
That's my prediction.
Independence Day, Will Smith, aliens.
There you go.
Makes you think.
There's a good Athletic long read in this, definitely. Definitely. Stuff. Have you enjoyed the break? Have you been pleased about the fact that there have been 9 days between last game and this game coming up?
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I have. Yeah. I realised I needed to let it go. Like the one out of Frozen, who sings Let It Go.
Oh, yeah, her. I think that's true, actually, because when I came in on Saturday to record the previous podcast, you were sat over there with your hood up. And I did think at one point that I might need to check your pulse. But there were sort of murmurings eventually. And you were somewhat crestfallen,
but
to be fair, a lot of people were.
Yeah. We sat and watched the end of the Ipswich game from our office in Germany. And I felt slightly reinvigorated by the fact they dropped points as well. You know, we live to fight another day, that kind of feeling about it. And that's kind of where I am now. It's all bets are off.
I think this is it. Gut feeling is that Leeds have got to win these next two games, and I think absolute minimum of 6 points from these three, but probably 7 points to make sure that they do finish top two. But that depends entirely, of course, on what Ipswich and Leicester manage to conjure in the next couple of weeks. And neither of them are looking good either. Neither of them seem to be in particularly fine fettle. I think of all the three, Ipswich will probably feel happier than anybody else, partly because top of the league and they're 2 points clear of third, but also because they're still surely in that mindset of being absolutely amazed that they're on the threshold of 90 points. As good as they were last season and as sort of organised as they are under McKenna, and they clearly do know, they do know what his tactics are supposed to be, and they evidently fit the squad really well. It is still, you know, this has gone way beyond, I think, what most people would have predicted, even though they looked like they had kind of playoff potential. They've pushed the boat out further than that. But Leicester, I just can't get a handle on at all. I think I said to you in the last podcast, and I do think this, that defeat at Elland Road has just lingered with them. And I do think if they'd put away one of those two chances at 1-0, or if that goal that was disallowed had been given at 1-0, I think they'd be up by now. And I think they'd have avoided this kind of shake of nerve that they've not been able to cope with. But it's absolutely wide open. So yeah, I do think Leeds absolutely need to beat Burnley and QPR. I think they'll need 6 points minimum, probably seven. But in saying that, who knows what the top two are going to do from this point?
A lot of people have been saying 6-7 is not going to be enough. I suspect it might be. 7 possibly might see us over the line. But right now, a goal feels like a million miles away. A point feels like a million miles away. A win feels even further away. And is that just the thing we just need to shake off?
Do you think it is? I mean, I'm not...
I don't think that. I think it's just we need one to go in off someone's arse, preferably Bamford's arse, so he can be reignited.
I'm not pretending that Leeds have played well since international break, because they haven't. And I think what went on in those 2 weeks, the players that were lost to injuries certainly made a difference to the game at Watford. I think Farker choosing the back four that he did down at Watford, shuffling the partnership of Rodon and Ampadu didn't help. I know why he said he did it, because he didn't think Firpo could play for long enough to keep that back four intact. But it was still breaking up the best you know, central defensive pairing that there is in the division, or that there has been since January. And they haven't looked full of beans since then. There hasn't been a lot of spark. They haven't played especially well. They got over the line against Hull, didn't have it in them against Sunderland, didn't have it in them against Blackburn. Watching the Blackburn game back, I do think that the substitutions in the second half created a bit of chaos that Blackburn were able to exploit. Blackburn basically got the goal that they were looking for all day in the way that they were hoping it was going to come, which was a bit of transitional play that found Smodics in space and left him one-on-one with Melier, who he'd back himself to beat and did. And that's how it fell. And I appreciate that, you know, Leeds were trying to win that game as opposed to thinking a point might be good from this. But on reflection and looking at the table, a point would have been much better than losing that game. And I do think the margins could be that tight in the end. So there's been plenty to think about this week. There's some big calls, I feel, for Farker before Middlesbrough on Monday. And that and QPR are difficult fixtures made harder by the fact that the change of the time for them means that it's Monday night, Friday night, as opposed to Saturday, Saturday.
Do you think the margins are massive compared to where we were a month ago? Because I don't feel like the narrative now is very much, it's all going wrong, we can't score goals, we're not playing well. But if you look back to January, February, when we were just winning loads of games, we didn't always play brilliantly. And arguably, we could have won both of these games the past week because we get a penalty. One of those shots goes in the first half against Blackburn. There's not necessarily as much in it as people like to think there is.
Mm. As Meatloaf famously sang, you took the words right out of my mouth. Must have been, well, you were kissing me, Michael.
Oh.
I was thinking the same thing, to be perfectly honest.
Will 2 out of 3 be enough for the final games?
Very good. Very good. No, I was thinking just the same thing. We're not losing by miles, are we? Like, we should have beaten Blackburn, Phil.
And yes.
It just, we fell the wrong side of the line. Just, and thinking about the build-up to that goal, I had coffee with a friend this week who suggested to me, he said, feels like that was the first header in the build-up to that Rodon's not won all season. It's on these things that seasons and games are turning.
But also, if you look at it a bit more than that, yes, if Rodon wins that header, Blackburn don't score. But if you look at what's going on the right side of Farker's defence, it's suddenly all over the place and there's so much space. It's actually really, really good passage of play from Blackburn. They're really slick and really sharp and make absolutely the right decisions when the ball comes to them. But it was a bit too easy to get through in those circumstances. And the team, I know why the changes were made or why changes had to be made, but the team just felt like it had been a little bit disrupted at that point. You're right about the chances. You're right about the fact that they could have won the game. This is when you can, if you want, and this is sometimes when clubs and coaches will kind of retreat into the comfort blanket of XG and shots on goal and chances and everything else, because sometimes that paints the picture of a game that you should have taken something from and didn't. And I'm not sure. I think I see this in two different ways. Blackburn got their game plan absolutely spot on and it worked for them perfectly. And it's not to say it was a joy to watch or anything like that, but they totally did a number on Leeds. At the same time, if Leeds had taken a point from that, you'd have said, well, you know, they did enough to do that. Whether they did enough to win the game is probably debatable, but there were moments in which they could have done. It's not desperate, I don't feel. It doesn't feel to me anything like, for example, that day under Grayson when they were trying to get promoted from League One and they got completely ragdolled by Swindon at Elland Road and the defeats were piling up and you were thinking, this is real sort of wheels have come off territory. I mean, in a lot of ways, what Leeds are suffering now is similar to the little spells that Leicester and Ipswich have had when forms deserted them. But I mean, I remember going to Yeovil with that Leeds team in 2010. That was the game where Naylor scored twice. I think it was Easter Monday. And having absolutely zero confidence in them getting anything from that game at all because of the way it had gone. And I can't say I feel like that about Leeds going to Borough. I don't feel as if it's fallen apart to that extent. But it's put them in a corner and it's asked questions of them and they're going to have to come up with answers.
That's what I was getting at with the it just feels like a goal thing I was saying before. Get the goal gives you the platform for the win. The win gives you the reminder that you can win and it's still there to be taken. So you can turn one win into two. It just feels like, I don't know, it's like the gas has gone off on the hob and you just need to turn the thing and press the ignition again and get it going, spark the whole thing to life.
The whole picture at the top is just bizarre though, because you've suddenly got Southampton on the rails, who I would have sworn a week ago, 10 days ago, were completely out of it. And obviously they've been helped by the fact that it's been a struggle for the top three to keep the results ticking over themselves. But you could have Southampton level with Leeds this weekend. Ipswich aren't playing this weekend because of the FA Cup. So that takes them out of the equation for a little bit longer, which means that the value of any result that Leeds get at Borough is kind of unknown until Ipswich play again, and also depends on what Leicester do against West Brom. That game is on Saturday lunchtime, so you've got fully 2 days between Leicester playing and Leeds playing. If Farker's due to speak to us tomorrow ahead of the Borough game, it'd be really interesting now at this point of the season where it's the absolute sharp end, what he thinks of the fact that you've got Leicester on at Saturday lunchtime and Leeds on Monday night. You know, how much he thinks that'll make a difference psychologically. And I know he'll say it doesn't make much and it doesn't really matter and there's no point dwelling on it.
Why ask him then?
But because I think just to needle him. Yeah. Because I think it is significant, don't you?
Yeah.
I think if Leicester beat West Brom, that is a long time to stew before the Borough game. And then after Borough, you've got a much shorter turnaround than everybody else before QPR, which is another away game and another difficult game. And I know this is just how it is, and that is just TV scheduling. But Leeds have been on TV a ludicrous amount this season. Well, I say ludicrous. I mean, you would televise them a lot, partly because of the audience, but partly because they've been really good and they've won a lot of games and they're worth televising. But these things can make a bit of a difference when it's this close to the end.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's some scenario running then, which is all anybody's doing, let's face it,
yeah,
at this point. So Leicester against West Brom, obviously you want West Brom to win that. A draw you would probably take as a secondary concern, I suppose. Southampton going to Cardiff, I suppose right now it would be very important to keep them off our coattails, so defeat preferably there. But I suppose a defeat would keep them in just enough so that they go to Leicester on Tuesday with a bit of a sniff of it, then they need to go after and win. Is that fine? I was going to say, actually, Phil, the other point is that nothing changes, does it, that Leeds need to go to Middlesbrough and win? So even no matter what Leicester do against West Brom, Leeds still need to go there and win.
They definitely do need to win anyway, but I think the chances of getting away with a fairly mediocre finish over these three games is higher with only three teams in the race than it is if Southampton are in the mix as well. There's the possibility that Leicester and Ipswich struggle to get themselves over the line too from here, so you actually don't need as many points as you would think, but add another team to the running and Southampton are getting close again and it does become a little bit more questionable. This weekend, I think, will dictate entirely how I feel about Leicester-Southampton, because to be quite honest, at the moment, I don't know what a good result from that would be. It really depends on how the table looks.
Yeah, no, good shout that. Well, I suppose, given the silly layout of fixtures next week, I think we're just going to get together once, aren't we, in between the two Leeds games.
Yes.
So maybe we do it Wednesday. And then we know exactly how the land lies, I suppose, after that.
I think definitely wait until that game's done, yeah.
So we know what's happened with Leicester-Southampton and what that leaves on the table. God, it's terrifying.
You've covered a fair number of Leeds promotion pushes. What does this feel more like? Does it feel like a 2010? Does it feel like a 2019? Where's this going to end up?
It doesn't feel like the Gary Monk season. You know, when they were going for the playoffs and I said it was done and then it definitely wasn't and it fell apart after Easter. It really doesn't feel like that to me. It feels similar to 2019, and I'm not saying that I think it's going to end the same way as 2019, but if you remember at this point with Bielsa, having looked like Leeds were going to get there because they just had enough and they kept winning enough games, and then suddenly it got away from them. I think they're in exactly that sort of zone at the minute where they know they can get this done. They know they're probably good enough to get this done, but it's all dependent on three big performances coming exactly when they need it. 2010 was slightly different because Leeds went from the point of basically being up.
We were Leicester, weren't we, in that season?
Yeah. 50-odd points Leeds had by the time they went to Old Trafford. And then it was like creeping death, just little by little, it's starting to go wrong. Norwich starting to get back into it. And then that awful, awful run leading up to Easter, which was four defeats back-to-back, when Grayson just seemed to have lost control of the season. And even on the last day, Gradle getting sent off, going behind to Bristol Rovers and relying on that sudden fight back, which was a proper... It was a great moment, but that was one of those days where the crowd kind of did it for them, you know, or certainly helped massively to get it done. I don't think this feels as anxious as that. I don't think it feels anywhere near as out of control as that. I think the bigger picture is that you've got a really kind of unprecedented situation at the top with the four clubs so close. And in a season where you would be as good as promoted already, you aren't. And as I've said many, many, many times, there's going to be at least one club, but potentially two, who are going to put together very, very strong seasons and are going to finish in the playoffs.
Yeah, what are we going to face with Middlesbrough then on Monday? You've got a side that is currently ninth in the Championship. They are 8 points back off Norwich in sixth with only 9 points to play for. So it's over above them. You've also got Hull and Coventry who are due to play each other this week, so they can't both drop points. So it would be a Herculean thing to overcome that. I think that obviously it's done for them, isn't it? So you've got hopefully a slight drop in performance, fingers crossed, although you can offset that by the fact that they always are up for it against Leeds. And
yeah.
Is it their final home fixture? I'm not sure. They'll want to turn it on for the home crowd. It's one of them, if not the final home game.
The top six looks a little bit locked in. I still think Hull have the capacity to get there, but it would require a pretty poor run from Norwich in the games that are left. I suspect the gap for Coventry is too big, and likewise, Middlesbrough Preston's last chance, and I don't think they were going to get there anyway, but with Southampton on Tuesday, they didn't really seem to bother to turn up in any sparkling fashion. Borough have had a really weird season. They lost Akpom last summer, didn't help them, because they've been good under Carrick. You know, he seemed to have got it together. He seemed to have good impetus there. Started really badly. There's quite a bit of clamour for Carrick to go. Recovered pretty well, pretty impressively. And actually were in better fettle when they came to Elland Road. What, as I recall, was a pretty tight game. You know, I think Leeds deserved to win it, but it wasn't an easy afternoon, that one, at all. But they've almost had the vibes that Leeds used to have in those seasons where they flattered to make you think from time to time, to make you think that, yeah, sixth might be possible, but actually you knew deep down that it was always going to be a gap of about 8-9 points that left you outside it. And that looks like them. They might well finish top half, but they're not going to make the playoffs from this position. So you start to wonder whether it does come down to the desire of the crowd at the Riverside to see Leeds fall apart, as the saying goes, or whether you'll actually find that Middlesbrough are a little bit like Preston were at Southampton earlier in the week, and it's kind of all done for them.
Well, fingers crossed, and obviously there's going to be changes to their team, their squad. Ayling sits this one out, Greenwood sits this one out. They've got quite a few injuries as well, haven't they, potentially? I did see a headline, but I didn't follow it through and read the article, suggesting they might be without up to like 10 or 11 players for this one from their whole squad.
It doesn't sound great up there, and obviously, from what I've read of Greenwood in dispatches, I don't think it's been going particularly well, or at least I don't think people have been enamoured with his form. Ayling, I think, has done fine. He's had a good number of assists. I think he's had games where it hasn't been so impressive, but it's been a sort of steady signing for him. And obviously this, in a few weeks' time, will bring him to the end of his time at Leeds. He doesn't play. He's on loan, so he's ineligible. The same with Greenwood. In terms of the sort of matchup and the head-to-head, very, very similar to most clubs that Leeds play. I think Leeds look better man for man. I think they look better across the team. So it's going to come down to performance levels, isn't it? And they need to find a little bit of spark and imagination that hasn't been there the past few weeks. I sort of hoped, Michael predicted this in the podcast before Blackburn, that moving Gray into midfield would give them, you know, a bit more energy there, make them a bit livelier, give them somebody who, you know, a midfielder who is very forward facing, likes to make runs into the box, actually carries a little bit of a goal threat. And I'd be very much inclined to stick with Gray there, because I think that is the sort of selection and the sort of decision that could yield good things in the games that are left. But I still think that when it comes to it, Farker will stick with what he knows and will stick with what's served him pretty well up to this point.
Yeah, I fancy he'll bring Kamara back in for this one. Just because it's a tougher away game. We're a bit safety first, aren't we, at times? And yeah. I think he'll probably go with that, which actually, as a starting 11, I'm all right with, I think.
What, you mean Gray back at right back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was chatting to a colleague of mine about this earlier in the week, and the safety first thing is quite interesting because I think that is the way that the games are approached, definitely. But you can't help feeling, and I think there's evidence of this, that when the substitutions come, it's quite the opposite of safety first. Sometimes it just feels like throwing everything at it, but not necessarily in a massively coordinated way. And I did feel, to what, there was a little moment, it was either in injury time or just before injury time, where Ampadu had the ball about 30 yards from Blackburn's goal. And you could see him thinking, I've got lateral passes on here, but not an awful lot else. And I don't really know what to do to change this. And there are definitely points where Leeds get sucked into that mindset of stick it left to Somerville and let's see what happens. And I think do that too often and it becomes a bit like the one trick pony thing, doesn't it? Where clubs can kind of negate that, teams can prepare for it and be ready. And okay, Somerville's so good and I think he was well deserving of the Championship Player of the Year award. He's been so good that he can often get by that. But it did just seem on, you know, against Blackburn in particular, that the ideas had kind of faded.
What do you think about these games being away from Elland Road, the next couple? I wonder if, given the amount of tension that's been there, whether it's. And I'm just looking for things that are going to work in our favour. I'm just clutching at straws. Actually, I tell you what, we actually had a question about this on the member show, which I'll play for you. Actually, Billy B sent this into us. So answer this question then, Phil.
Hi guys, I'm aware I'm performing mental gymnastics here and grasping at straws a little bit. But do we think there's any mileage in the idea that having our next two games away from home might be an advantage? Obviously, teams come to Elland Road this season, sit everybody behind the ball and try catch it on the break like Blackburn did at the weekend. Home teams tend to do that a little bit less. Less pressure from the crowd. Tell me I'm right, please.
Again, so that's clearly planted the idea in my head. Anyway, yes. I just realised from saying the words that that's where I got the idea from. But just going back to what I was saying about Middlesbrough before, Phil, that home crowd's going to want something out of them, isn't it? So is it going to sort of encourage them to be a little bit more risk-takey?
Well, tactically, I don't think there's any doubt that what was asked in that question is correct. At Elland Road, there are very few teams who really come out and play. And actually, even though Leicester were ambitious in the way that they approached the game, they did sit deep and try to counter-attack, which, you know, was a good tactic for them and should have worked. But virtually everybody else is in part of the bus territory. Away from home, like we saw against Coventry and against Watford, it is different. I don't think I can pretend that either of those games went particularly well, so I'm not sure there's necessarily any science behind the idea that being away from home is better than being at Elland Road. But I wrote yesterday, actually, about Leeds being an emotional club, and I wasn't trying to pretend that they're the only one, and I wasn't trying to pretend that they're the only club who suffer from this. But you do find, I've seen at Elland Road them force games over the line. I've seen them equally crush Leeds teams or at least, you know, make their own team wobble because of the atmosphere. And there's no denying that that's how it is. But I still think on balance and comfortably on balance, the Elland Road crowd is more of an advantage to the team than a disadvantage, without a doubt.
What do you do up front for this game? It's Bamford, isn't it? Bamford's going to come back in, surely, because he'll attract the ire of the Middlesbrough crowd. Nice focus for it, all that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, which is sometimes the sort of environment that he really likes. I cannot see Farker going with the system that he went with against Blackburn with Pirro up front. It just didn't really work and it didn't seem to bring much out of Pirro. So on the basis of what we've seen from Farker, you would assume that Bamford comes in and plays in that role. I'd be pretty tempted to try Joseph, I have to say, but I do get at the same time that it's a gamble. And I think it's very easy to make suggestions of changes that don't then get tested, you know. So for as long as Joseph isn't starting up front, it's easy to sit and say, well, he needs to play, and if you play him, he'll score goals. If you play him and he doesn't score goals, then there are obviously consequences of that. So you have to actually get that decision right, as opposed to just saying, right, let's just give it a whirl and Whether Bamford has been poor or not recently, and I don't think he's been great over the past few weeks, it has been an effective change overall since the start of January. I mean, you might have read, and we were watching this before the game, there's a really interesting thing going on with him and Joseph before the game on Saturday. Bear in mind, neither of them were in the starting lineup and both in the group of subs. And anybody who watches the warm-up will see that Leeds do a rondo beforehand, the substitutes do a rondo, where somebody's in the middle, pass the ball about, and when the ball goes into the middle, if the guy in the middle intercepts it, whoever's kicked the ball last swaps over with them.
Piggy in the middle.
Piggy in the middle, basically, with feet. And there was a proper little set to between Bamford and Joseph, a real sort of disagreement between them about who was supposed to go in. Now, this happens quite a lot where you see the players argue with each other, but it's usually quite light-hearted. This was more, without being, you know, totally overblown, it was more serious and there was more to it. And it took Cooper to intervene and Kamara as well. I think Dan James to sort of calm Joseph down. And Joseph was just not having it at all. And so you try to read into this and you sort of think, I wonder if Joseph was unhappy at not being picked, was Bamford a little bit niggly at not being picked. It isn't kind of settled, the number nine position at the moment, is it? I think if you did a straw poll of people, you would get a lot of different answers to this. And if you did a straw poll amongst supporters, I would be very interested to see how many people went for Joseph as opposed to the other two.
It's interesting, isn't it, how we're still having that conversation, even after all this time, because the Bamford chat was one that emerged during the promotion year, wasn't it, with Nketiah, and then JKA came in, and, you know, we know what happened there, but, you know, that's a conversation for a different day. The feeling that Bamford, when he goes off the boil, is not quite enough, and we bring strikers in who don't quite suit the system. And it happened again with Rodrigo, wasn't it? You can almost see echoes of Rodrigo coming in as a striker who's not hugely mobile, so therefore can't do the pressing. Ends up getting dropped into a slightly deeper position, and you play him up front and he does a little bit of stuff, but it's not quite enough. Is that just a symptom of being in the Championship, or is it just that the recruitment has possibly not quite been there, or, you know, maybe even Pirro was not quite first choice for the number nine signing?
I will say with Joseph, he looks as inexperienced as he is, and for as little we've seen of him, he in some ways looks like the most direct number nine replacement we've actually had as an option, because Nketiah was a very different type of, he was more of a poacher, wasn't he? Yeah. Playing on the shoulder kind of a striker, which didn't necessarily work for that team. And then we've had Tyler Roberts, JKA, Rodrigo, they've all been not quite a direct fit. Joseph looks like a traditional number nine in a way that none of those maybe did.
Yeah, we're in an era as well, aren't we, Phil, where they're harder to come by, I suppose.
Well, I was going to say less of a traditional number nine than a sort of modern number nine, which is that Nketiah was like your old-fashioned number nine poacher, like Michael said, and finisher. But that didn't work for Bielsa. It didn't work enough because he needed a nine who was running the channels, the wings, was dropping deep, linking up play, was kind of sparking the press. And that wasn't really Nketiah, or Bielsa didn't see him like that. I think Joseph can do all of that. I think he, well, as time's gone on, has looked much closer to a nine, to be perfectly frank, than Pirro. I was kind of expecting overall more from Pirro in the way of movement and presence and general thing. A great finisher, no doubt about that at all.
Has he proved at Coventry?
Well, one of them
one of them
went in, but no, he can finish. You know, he definitely can. But it did not look like the solution against Blackburn. It was not especially a decision that worked. I'm with you. I don't think Farker will stick with it, but common sense tells you probably will go back to Bamford. It'd be a really big call to play Joseph, wouldn't it?
But because you're then dispensing with your two senior strikers in order to put in a young player, which it sort of almost suggests an air of desperation, doesn't it, at that point? So you kind of can't do it from a psychological point of view, especially the damage it might do to the other two if they put a young lad in.
It does, but at the same time, you've got to do the right things at the right time, haven't you?
Based on merit.
Yeah.
When you think about Beckford being dropped towards the end of that League One season, and it did seem to, results did pick up around that time as well, and he then did end up making meaningful contributions to it, so...
And the thing with that as well was that you had in the background Glyn Snodden and Ian Miller, who were Grayson's assistants, saying to him for quite a sustained period of time, you need to change this up front. You know, I think he needs to come out of the team. And Grayson, understandably, I think, didn't want to do it because of how reliable and regular a goal scorer and good a goal scorer Beckford was. But you could see that the form wasn't there. And I think it went on for long enough for you to feel like the form, even though it was going to come back and it was only a temporary loss, had been lost in that point. So it needed a change. And you had Becchio who gave you an alternative. And I think that worked for them in the end, as did the decision to give Beckford the captaincy for the last game against Bristol Rovers. So there are games where you have to be brave. I think it's very different if you've got a choice between Beckford, who's already been banging goals in League One, and Becchio, who's been doing exactly the same, and a situation now where you're talking about Joseph, who was really, really impressive down at Chelsea, and actually has been pretty impressive a lot of the time, but hasn't played enough from the start for you to be certain that he's a cast iron pick. And I know people will say, well, you only find that out when you start to play him, and that's definitely true. But there's so much riding on these three games that at the same time you have to get it right. So if it's the right call and it's the thing to do, then it should definitely be done. But it shouldn't be done just on the basis that people aren't having the other two, therefore give somebody a go.
If I was Farker, I would do the right thing. Whatever that is. Yeah. Just do that.
I cannot deny that the idea of Joseph getting a game is quite tempting.
Yeah, the flip side of that is, as football fans, we always want the thing that's not happening is always the solution, isn't it? We always want to see that. And then you make it happen and it doesn't work.
Not only football fans, I mean, journalists are like that as well. And I will have been over the years where you say, if you'd done X, Y would have happened. But of course, it doesn't get tested because it didn't. You know, he didn't do X, Y didn't happen. So you have this sort of safe zone where you can say, well, that was a mistake, wasn't it?
It's the Jesse Marsh zone. It's what he's trading off now, isn't it? We would have stayed up.
But the additional question is always, so what if it doesn't work? What if you put Joseph in and you go, yeah, he needs to start, so you play him and he looks out his depth, which I don't think he would, but you know, it doesn't work.
I do feel like he's got a red card in him. It's one thing I will say. Looks like he might lose his rag and elbow someone.
Well, I suppose that goes back to the Rondo, doesn't it? The fact that it, you know, you thought this was something of nothing and then it developed into a little squabble. And I should just say, it wasn't like they were trading blows on the pitch, but you could see that it was more than just them, you know. There was a little bit of a fallout.
An overspill of testosterone, Phil.
That's a good way of putting it, yeah. Like this studio.
Well, we have got two bald men in here.
Yeah.
That's bald all frauds. I'm gonna say. It's the testosterone that causes it, isn't it?
Who's on your bald fraud list?
Maresca.
Okay.
I think it's an ad hoc list of Maresca.
Yeah. And it was entirely, given that they were about 17 points clear, it was entirely tongue-in-cheek, we should say. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of gained a bit of traction. Now, if you ever look at that, the official Leicester account posted anything, I don't know if it's Leeds fans who are doing it or whatever, but just piling in and calling him a ball fraud.
So less of a list than just a direct dig at Maresca.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, absolutely. So, well, it's another four fixtures, isn't it, that are going to shape the season in a very definitive manner. Leicester against West Brom, Southampton travelling to Cardiff, we go to Middlesbrough, and then it's Leicester-Southampton on Tuesday, and then we'll be back to see where we are, whether is it nuclear fallout or is it still waiting to push the button at that point?
I can't see much being decided after Borough, can you? We're going to need a little bit longer after that, but if they don't win at Borough, then yeah, I think people will be preparing themselves for the playoffs, won't they? That you have to mentally.
I will confess right now to having put the playoff fixture dates into my diary today, just in case. Probably won't need them.
I haven't.
No.
I'm not going to jinx this by telling you what I wrote yesterday, but
you've written the promotion piece, haven't you?
I've not resigned myself to the playoffs yet. However, I will be mentally ready for them, having done, how many have I done now? Two, at least three, yeah, not four.
Where were you in 87, Phil?
Scotland. Yeah.
How old at that point?
Quite honestly, I was six.
Yeah. No excuse.
I feel like that's legitimate reason. Who is, given that the awards are coming up, who's player of the year?
We have been tracking it, actually.
According to our stats, Joe Rodon.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so far.
Which seemed fair. I wouldn't be surprised if Ampadu or Somerville won it either, though.
Our top players, as it stands at the minute, Joe Rodon, so we've been scoring, members have been scoring them out of 10, game by game. Season average for Joe Rodon, 7.28, Ampadu 7.2, yeah. Somerville 7.18, and Archie Gray 7.13. So it's all to play for.
Interesting. I think it would be between Ampadu and Somerville for me.
Yeah.
Rodon very close. Rutter certainly kind of on the fringes as well, without a doubt. But if you push me, I'd probably say Somerville.
Well, let's worry about it. And that's tonight, isn't it? Actually, it's Thursday as we record this. So we will find out who gets what. It'll be announced before this show comes out.
Yes.
But we can react to it next week.
Let's record 4 or 5.
Yeah, I was going to say, if Michael just sits in and says, well done, Somerville.
Congratulations to the winner.
I think it's Joe Rodon. Yeah. I think it's Ethan Ampadu.
I mean, Young Player of the Year is pretty self-evident, isn't it? As reflected, we've spoken about the EFL Awards on the weekly show this week as well. So you can go back and check that out. But yeah, well done to all those lot. And I mean, it's all meaningless, isn't it, if we chuck this one in the bin?
Yeah, but it does reflect the fact that it's been a good season. I mean, I remember the seasons where it was basically Ross McCormack because he was the only person that people didn't want to sort of run out of town, you know, and was scoring lots of goals, you know, won it on merit on that basis. But, you know, there was simply zero competition. Whereas this time, you could make a pretty firm argument for 4 to 5 players in that squad.
I do hope none of the current squad enjoy those the evening as much as Ross McCormack used to enjoy the Player of the Year events.
I suspect they have been told.
Well, to circle back to where we started, we've got some absolute bollocksy Matt Letizia-related numbers chat on the member show this week. That'll be out on Sunday. Look out for that. Then we've got the match ball on Monday. So that'll be something to look forward to, won't it? Monday night.
Keep the faith, people. Keep the faith.
Be right, won't it?
Yeah.
Be right.
Always next year, isn't there?
There's always next year. Right, thank you for joining us on this one. We'll be back with Phil on about Wednesday-ish.
Yes,
next week,
I think so.
Once the tears have stopped. We'll see you soon. Bye.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.